So we are on this topic of Mana Shodhanam, this text which means purification of mind. And as we had said before, our mind has two kinds of impurities. One is the negative tendencies like anger, greed, jealousy, arrogance, pride, ego, selfishness. And the second is the agitation or the disturbances that come in the mind from within. And most of these disturbances come because of these negative qualities. When I'm jealous of somebody, or when I'm angry at somebody, or when I am discontented, or when I feel persecuted or, you know, criticized. So the two are connected. These negative qualities lead to agitation of the mind. And then an agitated or disturbed mind is then more prone to practice these things. You know, if I'm angry or if I'm disturbed or if I'm unhappy inside, then I will be more likely to lash out at somebody or get angry or criticize or fight. So they are connected. And unless the mind is purified, removed of these two negativities, spiritual progress is impossible. You may sit for meditation for 3 hours. You may help others, do charity. You may go on pilgrimages. You may go to Bethlehem or Mecca or Kailash or the Himalayas. You may go to the temple and church and pray. They will help. But unless your mind is pure, you will not progress spiritually. Especially this being a meditation class, if the mind is disturbed, if the mind has negativities, then no matter how long you sit, the meditation will not be fruitful. So purification of the mind is a prerequisite. And for that, the Lord's grace is necessary and self-effort is necessary. The Lord's grace is always with us. He is always there to bless us. But we have to turn our mind towards the Lord and ask for His grace. Then we have to become deserving of His grace. Through self-effort, through doing the right activities, I can become deserving of the Lord's grace. And that is how to purify the mind. So in the verse number 7, we have these 6 techniques or 6 exercises that are very beneficial for mental purification. And these 6 help us in purifying the mind. And without doing these 6, the meditation will not be fruitful. So if you want to do well in meditation, if you want to progress spiritually, if we want to get closer to God, if I want to become a better person, a more religious person, then I have to practice these 6. And it is here in verse number 7, which is on page 16 in the book. Manashuddhikaraniha sadhanani vadantiha yagnyo danam tapaschaiva japastirtham vratastatha. So mana shuddhi karani. So those who want to purify their mind have been taught these sadhanani, these 6 exercises. Vadanti, who says it? The wise people. The wise people who have written the Bible and the Quran and the Bhagavad Gita, all the saints and sages and the prophets have given us these 6 techniques, 6 exercises. And they are listed here. Yajna, which means rituals and worship. Dana means charity. Tapa means austerity. And comes japa, which is the chanting of the name of the Lord. Tirtha, pilgrimage to holy places. And vrata is vows, certain declaration, certain determination that one has to practice. We'll cover each one of them briefly.
So the first one is yajna, which is rituals or worship.
And that is in all the scriptures, you know, everywhere it is read in all the religions. They say, the Muslims say, you know, bow down to Mecca 5 days, 5 times a day. The Christians say you need to go to the church and, you know, get down on your knees and pray to the Lord. Sunday is the day of worship, but then they say every day one should do some, you know, spiritual activity. Hindus also have certain days depending on the deity you worship. But again, you know, these methods, or they will say every morning you should offer the fire to the Lord, and then you should read some books, read some holy. So worship is recommended in all the scriptures, but people misunderstand what the meaning of the word worship is. People think worship is just, okay, I go to the temple, you know, offer some flowers, go to the church, light a candle, or go to, you know, the mosque and pray. That's not worship. That's only a small aspect of worship. There was a famous saint in India named Raman Maharishi who lived in the 20th century and the part of the 19th century. And he has a very beautiful line. He says, Jagat Ishadi Yukta Sevanam Ashtamurti Brit Deva Pujanam. He says, how do you worship the Lord? Deva Pujanam. How do I worship the Lord? He says, worship the Lord through service. Because the world is a creation of the Lord. In fact, the Lord himself is of 8 forms. The Lord, not the infinite consciousness, which has no form, which is formless. But the Lord that we know it, the Lord who has become this universe, is of 8 forms. 8 limbs, they say. So what are the 5? What are the 8? The 5 are the body, which is the air, space, fire, water, and earth. And we are all made of these same 5 elements. Air, space, fire, water, earth. Our bodies are not only we, but all plants, all animals, all birds, all fish. Everything in this universe, any body that you see, any body is made of air, space, fire, water, earth. The plants are made of that. The birds, the fish, even the rocks, everything made of 5 elements. So the 5 elements are essential. So that is the body. Then the Lord is said to have 3 other limbs. One is the mind, one is the intellect, and one is the ego. So I, as an individual, is made of 8 limbs. As an individual, Anil or Armando or Kerry, whatever my name is, but I have 8 limbs. 5 are the elements, air, space, fire, water, earth, which all of us have. Then we have a mind which feels the emotions. Then we have an intellect, which is the seat of judgment, decision. And then the ego, the perceiver, feeler, and thinker that makes me think I am a nail, I am a doctor, I am a, you know, live in Bakersfield. And I am separate from her and I am separate from him. And then there is a God who created me. So this ego is the individuality. So I am made of 8 limbs. So that we clear. But how does God is made of 8 limbs? What do we mean by that? So what we say is that all bodies of the universe, all bodies, whether it's plants, animals, birds, fish, humans, all are part of that one body, which we call as Virat, which is the total body. So we are all connected because we are all made of the same elements, the air, the space, the fire, the water, the earth. And, you know, and that is there in every one of us. There's air because we breathe. There is space, you know, because there is space in different parts of our body, like in our digestive system, in the head. A lot of people have a lot of space. And then air, and then there is, you know, matter, the solid matter, that is earth. And then there is fire, which is the heat, which maintains our temperature at 98.4. air, space, fire, water. Water, we are 70 or 80% water. But what they say is that all the bodies of the world together make up that one body called Virat. So the universal body is that Lord, and we are all part of that. So we are not separate from Him. We are not separate from each other. We are part of that. So we are the part of the universal body. Then the universal mind and the universal intellect is called Hiranyagarbha. These are just technical terms. You don't need to know them. But what they say is that all the minds of the universe are also connected. We are connected emotionally and intellectually. We are connected with everybody else. And that is why, especially if the connection is very strong, like a mother, she may be in her home and her child may be in a different state. But if something is happening to the child, because she's closely connected, she knows that my child is not well or my child is not happy. And my child is calling me, and she'll tell the dad, call the child. And his dad will say, it's the middle of the night, she must be sleeping. You know, why are you calling her? No, I know something is not right with her. And it will happen. The dad picks up the phone and the daughter says, yes, you know, I was upset. I was thinking about mom. I was going through. And that is why people have things like premonitions, where they can sense what is happening, or they can figure out what is happening in another room. People who are, you know, who have this intuition, they can tell, you know, what is happening in another's mind. They can read others' minds, those who are spiritually evolved. They can sense what is going to happen, the predictions or the premonitions. They sometimes even, in fact, they have done experiments where people with their mind could actually move objects in another room. So that is what we are saying, that we are all connected. Mentally also we are connected. In fact, it is said in one place in the Upanishads that you cannot break a leaf without disturbing some distant star. It is said very clearly. That means even breaking of a leaf creates disturbance in the whole cosmos. And that goes on forever and ever, because everything is connected. So at the body level we are connected, at the mind and intellect level we are connected, and that totality, the total individuality, all of us, even though we think we are separate, but actually we are part of that one totality, which appear separately because of our ignorance. I'm not even at this moment talking about the total consciousness. That is even higher. In fact, in reality, everything is that one consciousness. But even at the worldly level, we are all connected, at the mental level, at the physical level, and even at the ego level. Once the ego dissolves, then you realize that there is only oneness. And so he says that service of the Lord is what? Service of the eightfold beings. The eightfold beings that are the five elements, the mind, intellect, and the ego, when you serve them, and you serve them as a manifestation of the Lord, as a creation of the Lord, as the Lord Himself. Not even to say that it is the, but just the Lord Himself. And then it has to be done without any ego, which we will come to the next. So, true worship is serving the world as an expression of the Lord. And there also, worship also involves practicing certain disciplines, you know, like for the Christians, maybe practicing the Ten Commandments, for the Buddhists, you know, learning the teachings of Buddha, for a Muslim to study the Quran and read the Quran. So certain amount of self-study for a Hindu, read the Bhagavad Gita. So practicing all these disciplines is also part of worship, where I study the scriptures and then I worship in the right way. So talking about Ten Commandments reminds me of a little story. There was this man who went to church, and he went with the intention of stealing a hat. You know, people take off their hat and leave it outside. So he went with the intention of stealing a hat. And the sermon finished, and the sermon was on the Ten Commandments. And after the sermon, he goes and tells the father, I came here with the intention of stealing a hat. You know, people leave the hat outside. But after I heard your sermon, I changed my mind. The father was very happy. Oh, so when I said, thou shalt not steal, you know, as one of the commandments, is that what made you not steal the hat? He said, no, father. When you said, thou shalt not commit adultery, I remembered where I had left my hat. So that is not what we recommend, but anyway. So the next one we come to is dana or charity, and that is very important. Yes. Yeah, the ego is defined as the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. That I think myself to be this limited individuality, which is the perceiver, feeler, and thinker. That is the ego. That is the individuality. Now, me, that I feel my little world, and then, you know, you are your little world, and so whatever I feel, through the body, I feel the, you know, I perceive the objects, through the mind, I feel the emotions, through the intellect, I think of the thoughts. But the perceiver, feeler, thinker is the ego, is the individuality, which you can call as jiva, the individual person. What you say as Armando, you know, that who are you? You say, well, using the body, I am a perceiver. When I use my mind in the world, I become a feeler. When I use my intellect, I become a thinker. So I am a perceiver, feeler, and thinker. That is who I am. And the body, mind, and intellect are my equipment. So the ego uses this equipment of body, mind, and intellect to function in the world.
Deserving of the love and forgiveness of the Lord.
Yeah. Because see, none of us, ultimately all of us have that element of the consciousness, the Lord within us. I mean, no matter how many evil deeds he has done, of course he will have to pay for them. Some of them he paid in this life, but others he'll have to pay in subsequent lives. But if he wants to turn his mind to the Lord, there is no harm in giving him the opportunity. And it does not mean that by bathing in the holy water, all his sins are forgiven. It's not that, but at least he has started the journey towards spirituality. And if the priest's job is to encourage him, I absolutely agree with him. I don't think he did anything wrong, because everyone should have the opportunity to improve themselves spiritually. And especially when he is in his last stages and going through so many, you know, emotions and all. Yeah, if he can be helped, I don't see anything wrong with that. Because then otherwise you have a very narrow view of what Christianity or what religion is. You know, Jesus said, love thy neighbor as thyself. And if that neighbor happens to be Jeffrey Dahmer, you're supposed to love him too. If you are a true Christian, you cannot hate anybody. Yes, person should be punished for their actions. But you cannot, suppose you live next door to him, you have to love him, because that's what Jesus said.
True.
And people do pray. You know, in fact, they always have a minister who will go and pray with that person before he's hanged or executed. So, you know, so that I don't have any problem with that. Huh? Yeah. The Lord is in everyone. That's very important. Okay, so we have done talked a little bit about rituals and worship. Of course, there is a lot more we can talk, and we probably won't finish all six today, but at least we can start. The second one is dana or charity. Now, charity is a very important subject in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 17th chapter, which we just finished. There was a teacher who came here, and he talked very beautifully about what is the true meaning of charity. You know, people just think, there's a homeless guy walking, I gave him $20, that's charity. And that's good, there's nothing wrong with that. But charity, there is a lot more to than just giving. Because there are three kinds of charity. And giving depends very much on your mental attitude. What is the attitude with which you are giving? The highest form is called Sattvic. In our Bhagavad Gita, there are three kinds of people. Sattvic are the pure people, the spiritual people. Rajasic are the passionate, the ones who are working, achieving, the majority of us. The saints and the wise people come in the Sattvic. Rajasic are the majority of us who are out and working and acquiring and possessing and collecting and wanting and desiring and all. Those are the majority. And then there are a certain amount of percentage of people who are the tamasic, who are considered the lazy ones, who don't work and who are living off welfare and who are basically, you know, living on society. They may be very rich, but they are not producing anything. Maybe their father left them money. So they're just enjoying and, you know, indulging and not contributing. So there are three kinds of people, the pure people, then the passionate or the active, and then the third ones are the lazy or the useless people. So again, charity is of three kinds. The first one is the pure people, the how charity should be done. That is the correct way. They said charity should be done at the right time, at the right place, to the right person, with the right attitude, and should be done with modesty and plenty. Oh, you need to do all those things? Yes. Right time, right place, right person, with the right attitude, with modesty and given in plenty. So what do we mean by right time and right place and right person? That means, first of all, when you give, you should make sure that that person is deserving of my help. And so it can, so one has to investigate. You can't just, okay, somebody came to my house and, you know, is asking for a donation, and just to get rid of him, I write a check. And we sometimes do that. You know, this guy's pestering me, let me. But it has to be done that if I should know, you know, that this person is truly deserving. Somebody is a hardworking person, needs money to go to school, or a family that is in distress where they're trying hard and they're working. They can't make ends meet. Or better than that is to pick an organization where you know that the money will go to the right place. So an organization that you believe in, that is compatible with your opinions, that you are seeing it is doing good work. So that is the best. You know, so if there is a tragedy or something, and if there is an organization that you know is doing genuine work, and the majority of the money won't. And we find some of these organizations, their administrative expenses are 65 and 70%. And so one has to be very careful. We're not saying that you should not give, but it is better to give where you know that the money is really needed. So the right time, and then also at the right time. Like, as I said, a student needs money to go to college. And he, you know, that is a better time to give him than, oh, after he finished his college and he's starting a job, then he doesn't need it. You know, then so at the right time, at the right place, to the right person or the right organization, and with the right attitude. The attitude is very important, because if I give it with the attitude that I am superior to this person, or I am so great, or little bit of ego develops that, you know, I am, you know, a great donor, you know, I have done so much for society, then slowly what that does is it fattens your ego. And that should not be done. It should be done with the attitude that, Lord, you are in this person to whom I am giving. You are there. I am seeing you. Not only that, whatever I have is a gift from you. Whether it's my body, has been given by you, my mind and intellect, my ability to think, my ability to feel, my ability to work, my ability to create money. So, and even this whole world has been given by you. The money I have is your gift to me. So when I am sharing what I have, it could be money, it could be time, you know, like if somebody needs help, like the Habitat for Humanity, I go out and build a house, you know, climb up on the roof, and if I have the ability and I have the talent to do that. Or it could be in time. I go and volunteer. I work in a nursing home or in a hospital or a school or a library. If somebody is sick, I go and sit with them for an hour or two. Somebody is dying of cancer and just wants company, doesn't want anything. So help, charity could be anything. Could be emotional, could be physical, could be, you know, financial. So when I am giving it, I say, the Lord, you are in that, and whatever I have is given by the Lord. So when I am serving the world, I don't have any sense of ego. I don't have any sense of pride. I don't have any. In fact, they say the best charity should be done anonymously, or should not be done for name. Sometimes people say, well, you know, if one person donates, then it inspires others to give, you know, like in a church or something. So it is okay to have your name, but it should not be done with the attitude of becoming famous. So that is the best. The second type of charity which is done is by the second quality of people who are very arrogant, very active, is that they do charity for their personal gain. Okay, by donating money, I become very famous. And, you know, the elections are coming up, and I'm going to stand for, you know, city council or supervisors, and I want people to know. People will say, oh, you know, he's a great, very charitable. So, or I give money so I can improve my business. Like there is a government official, you know, who can get me a contract. And so I send him a very expensive gift at Christmas, or his son needs some help, so I gave him money, or I secretly send him, or have a lobbyist, they call them lobbyists, which is the same thing, who somehow gets money to him through some organization for his re-election or whatever. So money given with the idea of personal gain, that what can I get out of it, is the second kind, which is inferior, obviously, to the first one. Because here you are giving it not for the benefit of the individual. Suppose that tomorrow that individual doesn't have that position, you will never even look at him. So then if you are giving money with that attitude, then that is called selfish. That is the second. And the third, which is the worst, is to give money by insulting somebody. Like somebody comes and you insult him and say, you are a worthless beggar, you are a piece of this and that, and then you throw some money and get out of here, don't come back. Especially in India and all, where there are so many beggars, sometimes people will do that. And that is the worst kind. Also, giving money to the wrong kind of individual. Like, you know, this person is an alcoholic and a drug addict, and you give him $20, what is he going to do? He's going to drink and get drugs. So that is the third kind, where it is given to the wrong person at the wrong time, at the wrong place, with the wrong attitude, where you want to make yourself feel superior and humiliate that other third person. So that is the worst kind. So charity should be done properly with the right attitude, and should be done in plenty. Because, as I said, whatever I have is the Lord's gift. So it is very important every year to set aside a percentage of your income for service, a percentage of your time, a certain amount of my time, certain amount of my effort should be. So that is not, and you are not doing anybody a favor, because we get so many favors. You say, why should I give my money? I worked hard and earned it. Yeah, but to earn that money, how many people participated? Your employees, your customers. And not only that, but there is so much we are getting free. Like, are you paying for the sunlight? Every morning the sun blesses you. You are not paying. The nature is giving it to you free. Are you paying for the air that you breathe? Are you paying for the water that you drink, the rain? No, the Lord is constantly showering us with blessings. So what I believe is that we are constantly accumulating negative karmas. You are taking from society. You are taking. You are taking the air, the sun, the water. You are taking from people, especially in this country. You know, the people are comparatively more fortunate as compared to in Africa or, you know, some poorer countries. So it is our duty to give back. Otherwise, you are accumulating negative karma. So it is very important to do some charity. Every week, I do some charity. Every month, every year. In fact, certain religions, like some of the Christian faiths, they set aside 10% of their income every year to be given to the church. The idea being that certain percentage, in Europe and all, they do that. They deduct it from your paycheck. So that is the whole idea, that charity should be done. So today we have just covered two, rituals and charity. The other four we'll cover next week. And then if we have time, then we'll do the seventh one, which is the most important, which is in the next verse. Any comments? Any? Yeah, as a human being and as a householder, I have certain responsibilities, you know, as an adult. One is to take care of my children. That we all know, you know, we do that. Then I have to take care of my elderly parents. That is part of my duties. Because they have brought me into the world and they have done so much. So, again, that's not a favor. If you take care of your parents, you are only discharging the debt you owe them. Because they have done so much for you, brought you into the world. Mother woke up at night when you were sick and when you were crying and, you know, all that. So you have to take care of your children. You have to take care of your parents. You have to take care of religious institutions and saints and sages. That is part of that. And that includes, you know, like social service organizations and all. Then you have to take care of animals and birds and fish. That is also part of your duty. Because what we have done is we have deforested the whole earth. And the poor animals have no place to go. They have no food to eat. They have nothing. So feeding the birds or feeding the animals or and then also growing plants, because we also have to serve, because plants serve us constantly. Trees, you know, they give us shade. They remove all the carbon dioxide and give us oxygen. That's why trees are so important, because trees are constantly removing the dirt from the atmosphere, removing the carbon dioxide and giving us oxygen. So we owe a great debt to the trees. And that's why they say the trees are like yogis. They stand there for 40, 50, 60 years just serving and asking for nothing in return. The trees just get little water and nourishment from the ground and they give us so much. So we must grow trees. You must work for the environment. So that is all part of human duties. And so take care of my children, my parents. Take care of spiritual and, you know, social service organizations. And spiritual people like saints and all, and then I have a duty to other living creatures. And the earth itself is a living creature. You know, the earth is our only home, so we have to take care of it. We have to protect the earth. We have to protect the environment. So that is all part of. That is part of humankind's duties. And then also remembering our ancestors. You know, in Hinduism, they designate one day a year where you go and offer prayers, not only to your father who has passed away, but your grandfather, great-grandfather, because we owe them a debt of gratitude because they are the lineage from which we came. Also, whatever we are today is what our fathers and grandfather and great-grandfather did. Like we have this, you know, beautiful computers, you know. And the first computer that was made, I think, in the 1960s, you know, was like a huge room, like this hall that we have, big hall like that or even bigger. And it was full of these transistors and, you know, valves and, you know, and it cost millions of dollars and used to break. And all it could do was very simple calculations like plus and minus and multiply. That's all it could do. But if they hadn't started, and today we can buy a computer from Walmart, a small one, for $5, which can do a million times more than what that computer could do and for $5. But if our ancestors in 50s and 60s hadn't made that first computer, we wouldn't have been there. If the Wright brothers hadn't flown those first 100 feet or whatever, you know, with their little plane, if Henry Ford hadn't made that clunky car, that one. So we owe a great debt of gratitude to our ancestors. So one all the time has to be grateful to our parents and our ancestors. That is part of the human duties. Sorry, that's a long answer to your short question. Yeah, there was a man who said that the children of today don't listen to their elders and are very rude and disrespectful. He said that 2,500 years ago in Egypt. There was a 2005 years ago, 2005, he said the same thing, that the children of today are very disrespectful, very rude, they don't listen to their elder. So this has been a constant issue. You know, it's not something new. You are not the first one who has found that out. But yes, you are right. One has to teach them. But one has to teach them by example. You have to teach them by example. You do the right thing, then slowly they will also learn. Yeah, one has to remind them. One has to tell them. But this is a phase they all go through. Ultimately, when they go out into the world and start go to college, and when they go to their workplace and they have to deal with people, they realize that these values have to be practiced. Otherwise, they cannot be rude and, you know, and expect to get anywhere in the world. So it's not a new problem, but yes, it definitely the children should be taught. And more than that, they should be shown, because they will do what you do, not what you say. So example is very important. Where? In schools, yes. Yeah. Schools, but also at home. Right. Home is first, right. But also in the schools, yeah. I think education has to be both. They spend more time at home than in the school, because each teacher, they only spend an hour, because they go from one. And she has to do the subjects and she has to... But so discipline can be taught in the schools, to be on time and to follow the rules and do your homework and all. But I think mostly it is the parents' responsibility. Right, they have 30 students. And so I think the purpose of this is that we should all try to practice these every day. One has to do some ritual, worship, some charity, and then we'll talk about austerity, chanting of the name of the Lord, going to spiritual places, then doing some vows. So this has to be practiced every day or on a regular basis. I mean, you cannot go to pilgrimage every day, but the idea is that every day do these spiritual activities. That is the purpose.